SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough. Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, on this Wednesday, and it's an absolute pleasure to get Dr. Allday back in here after taking the summer off, and obviously we're well into the fall, and he, you know, he's tromping around. He's got so much to do, whether it's practicing, whether it's responsibilities involving Luberson and Reborn, continues to develop new products and bring them out on the marketplace. And then he's, of course, out there doing some team roping as well. You don't have to worry about moss growing under the feet of Dr. Stephen Allday. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Reborn and Luberson. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm excellent. And great to get you on. And I only saw you one time all summer, and it was a hit and run. You grabbed Siaka and gave him a Zets, and and off you went. I love it. Well, as always, we look forward to the conversations, and we take things right off of the headlines. The sad note, and I knew I was going to talk to you this week, and I put the news of Dr. Fallon, his passing. I put it off to the side because I figured nobody'd be better than you to let everybody know about his long and storied career.
Well, obviously, I know Luke because he works for some clients of mine, and he does a groom air work over in Lexington. And he's one of the original partners. His grandson, Luke Fallon, is a partner there, but he's one of the original partners of Haggard Davis and McGee. So, and he's been riding around. I've seen him from time to time in Lexington with Luke riding around. He's been an icon for, a really, really long time. And, he's seen a lot of great horses come and go over the years and has been primarily involved in broodmare work himself, and his son is excellent. And his grandson is. He does a great job for getting our mares in pole and whatnot. And it's just a change in time, the passing of an icon, but the world is a different, way, way different place than when the elder Dr. Fallon was first coming in practicing. And it's quite amazing because he's seen, quite a change in his time. And I think he was, for sure, he's in his 90s. I don't know exactly how old he was. Are you certain?
87.
I thought he was in his 90s. Well, anyway, the number of horses and the number of things he's seen, the way medicine's changed and how you practice and whatever. But the end result is, as the times change, he changed, and as technology and the equine, the racetrack business and thoroughbred breeding business, and then now sport horse medicine and things like this, he's seen quite a bit of, a metamorphosis of the horse business and the veterinary practice in the Lexington area for going on probably 5-6 decades, the better part of it for sure, through both himself and then his grandson. And it's quite a legacy. And needless to say, he's certainly been, he was one of the founding people there at Haggard's, and can't say enough good things about him because, they helped to establish a veterinary practice and industry that goes back many, many generations, here in the bluegrass. And he will be missed, but his legacy is carried on through his grandson and through several other practitioners that are now part of that big practice.
He started at Notre Dame and then went to Cornell for his vet work, and joined his uncle Charlie, Doc Charlie Haggard, at the family firm, and then it was Haggard, Davidson McGee, fourth generation himself, the fourth generation of a veterinary in his own family. I mean, think about that.
That's amazing.
That goes back to probably to 1800.
It goes back, the better part of the last two, well, not this century, obviously, but the preceding, centuries. It's amazing. But that's how long the breeding, we're just going to show you how long the racing business has been going on, in this country, and how it continues to, it goes through its ups and downs, and certainly has, its moments, but it's certainly made a big, they've made a huge impact, both locally and here in the state of Kentucky, but also internationally, because they've had veterinarians go all over the world that practice in that practice.
Well, I appreciate the appreciation, and interesting, that he grew up on Beaumont Farm.
Sure,
where his father was the farm manager and bloodstock advisor. And in terms of contributing to Lexington society, virtually was on every imaginable board and so forth. Wanted to pay appropriate tribute, and I appreciate it. Turning our attention to news of the day, Steve, and we have not discussed this topic in a while, and the cluster of injuries and fatalities that happened at Churchill, the KHRC and Churchill management, everybody working together here over the last few weeks, and we've discussed this. There's a series of things that you do to evaluate the surface. You look for commonalities among the horses that were stricken, and you try to see if there's some sense to be made. But a lot of times there isn't any sense to be made. It's just a random cluster that is rather haphazard. I mean, it sometimes there is a root cause involving the racetrack. Other times it's just bad luck.
Well, Steve, it's typically when you see, catastrophic breakdowns, okay? I mean, or horses that just, you got to categorize, what was it? Was it an orthopedic, failure or breakdown due to a fracture and or, I mean, that can give you a bleeding episode, like a ruptured abscess, or possibly, let's say, an aneurysm that ruptured. And, these things happen so rapidly, the horse goes down, and bingo, they just, they don't get back up. They just expire right there. Or if they suffer, let's say, a pelvic fracture, or, let's say a limb, sesamoid dehiscence, bilateral sesamoid dehiscence, where they fracture through both sesamoids and the leg drops down. These are things that you can pretty much measure. I mean, and obviously, statistically, they've got to take into account all the reasons why a horse is going to break down. And there are numerous. I mean, because we're talking about an animal that is, been trained, has been prepared, has been backgrounded, and his foundation has been established, cardiovascular, musculoskeletal, hoof, it's just right on down the line. And, so it's a multi-complicated thing that can occur. I mean, if you have a lameness issue in one area, you overload another area at high speed, it just increases the amount of pounds per square inch pressure. So therefore, it may not be the primary problem, but the compensatory problem is the thing the horse will break down from. So, whether it be a soft tissue collapse, meaning ruptured suspensory tendon, something like this, or let's say something gives way, and due to, let's say, bilateral sesamoid fracture, where the thing just collapses and they go down because you basically totally disrupted the attachment of the suspensory down through the fetlock, and there's nothing to support it anymore, and down the horse goes at full speed. So And then, you know, there's always the question of, like, the ones that are the big puzzle. You can't find anything overtly that structurally is wrong with them. And then all of a sudden you do a post necropsy on them, a post on them, and you find that essentially you can't find anything wrong except for the possibility that there was cardiovascular collapse, meaning that there wasn't a rupture, abscess, bleeding, hemorrhage, this sort of thing, but the mechanics or the electrical activity of the heart just ceased due to a combination of maybe medications, the combination of the fact that a horse's electrical activity was disrupted due to a medication and or something that, you know, just essentially went past this horse's threshold. So, you know, identification of the problem sometimes is a lot more complicated, and to just blame a racetrack, you know, for it, you know, is a little bit irresponsible without having all the information. I mean, and as we and I discussed earlier, I mean, it's very possible that it just so happened that, you know, just it was just a coincidental happening where they just seemed to cluster at one point in time, and it statistically you may go for years and it never happen again, and all of a sudden, you know, it averages it out over it. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at it. Obviously, to be responsible, you know, stewards of this industry, I mean, we've got to do our due diligence, and that's essentially identify the problems as to, like, what the causes are and what we can do to prevent them. Because prevention is always the best way to attack these problems after they're identified. And, you know, prevention is always more rewarding and a lot more better for the horse in the long run. And you get a lot more productivity and reap a lot more rewards and benefits.
Hey, one thing that I mentioned earlier this morning, too, Steve, as part of this, and, you know, reading the Matt Hegarty's coverage of the KHRC meeting and the, you know, the McPeterson evaluating the track at Churchill and basically giving it an all clear, the whole evolution of the process of trying to identify commonalities and incorporating necropsies for all horses that die on the racetrack, mornings, afternoons, incidentally in their stall, whatever it might be. Yeah, this is really only taken full root, what, the last 10 years, really?
I think it has probably become, I would probably have to go back more like 20 years.
Okay.
Myself. I would say like the late 90s. And the reason why I say that is because I think it was certainly starting to get attention prior to that. And it finally came to surface. Because I remember, like, if you, and you probably, you know, remember it as well, but like the horse that that was in the Breeders' Cup at Belmont Park, Mark Reed's, the name escapes me right this second.
Mr. Nickerson.
Yeah, Mr. Nickerson. He goes down, and another horse goes down, and we lose two horses in that race due to, and I think those events that are widely televised and a lot of people listen to and watch, you know, at the same time being it's on, you know, international TV, it certainly polarizes and puts a lot of focus on the audience to, you know, analyze, like, wow, I mean, you know, these are the best of the best, and they have earned their right into the starting gate at a major sprint or a million-dollar race at the Breeders' Cup. You know, why did this happen? You know, and it's in all honesty, it's a very, very, you know, honest approach, and it shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't be poo-pooed and, you know, like, well, it's just one of those things, you got to live with it. You know, the public demands, you know, that you got to, like, you know, investigate, and you got to know what you're talking about, and you got to go back. Did we dot all our I's? Did we cross all our T's? Did we make sure that our examination and pre-race inspection was adequate, and that was it comprehensive enough to make sure that this horse was capable, ready, and that you know, you don't put out a bad product, you know, to the public, and it should be that way on a daily basis. Being that whether you're you know the examining vet here in Kentucky or you're at Charlestown, or you're at Penn National, or you're at, you know, some small park out in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico, okay, or whatever. I mean, the same, you know, guidelines and standard of care should be all of our goal as professionals and also as horsemen and people in the industry, because, you know, one black eye is one too many, you know, as far as like, because, you know, it speaks volumes about the people that are at the upper echelon and every step in between to the lowest level of racing. So, you know, it's important that we have standards developed and we understand, like, why these things are happening, and we start learning what these signs are early on, and we stick our neck out and say, listen, you know, I think this is a risky situation. We're probably going to have to not let this one run this time. Now, I mean, unfortunately, you become very unpopular by doing that, but sometimes erring on the side of caution is not such a bad thing. So, you know, but obviously with, you know, good reasoning and due cause, I mean, as to why you're making this decision, and that it can be backed by, you know, credible evidence and things of this nature too. But unfortunately, you know, I mean, it's a tough call for the examining vets, whether you're doing it at Belmont Park or you're doing it at, you know, someplace in the middle of nowhere. If you're doing it at, let's say, Mahoning Valley, near me or whatever, you know, which is certainly a different class of racing. So, but the standard of care really shouldn't be any different for the best of the best or the bottom of the barrel as well. So, you know, they're all under our stewardship, and we need to maintain our level of, you know, the highest caliber of our expertise as professionals, and because, you know, they're all the same. I mean, I don't prep the joint for a 20 claimer or a 5 claimer any different than I do for a grade one winner. You know, I prep them all the same. I try to, for sure, in my mind.
The checklist and the, I would say, the tightening of the restrictions and the, you know, the decisions by regulatory vets that do pre-race examinations, that, you know, I think everybody, for instance, in New York got used to it you know, very quickly. Everybody adjusted, and, you know, there's obviously some consternation, you know, when you're jogging a horse for the vet and they think the horse is off, and the trainer who knows the horse knows that, you know, it might be an older horse that warms up, and once he warms up and gets loose, he's absolutely fine, but at a glance might not be moving the way a vet would like. And so, you know, those nuances, that tightening of those kinds of loopholes, that has been, you know, a real progress, basically. I mean, everybody adjusted and understood very quickly that we have to be, you know, hyper vigilant, and you know, your judgment as a veterinarian and judgment as a horseman is going to come under, you know, heavy scrutiny if we're not doing everything we can, you know, to keep horses that might be in a danger zone off the racetrack.
Well, absolutely, well said. Actually, I concur. You know, fix horses for a living. That's what I do, and that's what I've done for 30 plus years. And as much as it kind of confounds me a little bit, and I'm a little devastated when I say that, but I think that's how long I've been trying for now. So, but the point is that, you know, you got to keep raising the bar, and you've got to answer all the questions, and you've got to, you know, any of the queries that are presented need to be, they are answerable questions. And if you don't feel comfortable with it, if it's not in your comfort zone, as far as like the decision that you make, if you know, let's say, I mean, and it has happened numerous times in my career where a state vet came and examined the horse and said, hey, I don't think this horse is right. He's good. And, you know, in order to, being that if this was a patient or a horse that I have known and worked on regularly, and I know extremely well, because sometimes, you know, horses ship in and out, and the state veterinarian is at the, you know, he's in a tough spot. And the reason why they're in a tough spot, because they don't see this horse every day.
Right.
They are taking a snapshot intermittently. And if they recognize a problem, then all of a sudden they say, look, I've made a note, or there's been some notes made on this horse about this area, and he looks a little off for me today. You know, they're certainly trying to do the best job and put the best product out there for the public to make a judgment on, as far as, like, you know, with the gambling, wagering, and also, you know, that the horse can perform to his best. Now, obviously, not every race can have a favorite. I mean, you don't look up there and see every horse at even, you know, at the same odds across the board. It just doesn't happen. So the point I'm making is that, you know, certainly, you know, the product that you put out there has to be in the best possible condition it can be to compete at the level that it was, you know, supposedly picked to run at. Now, whether how he's going to perform is sometimes anybody's guess. I mean, sometimes circumstances obviously dictate a great deal of that. That's why there are, you know, horses that are long shots that win races, and there's horses that are even money that win for fun. So, you know, my point to this is that it still is incumbent upon, you know, all of us as the stewards and, you know, the backbone of the industry to, you know, make a decision. And you don't want to feel what you need.
Oh, no. Steve, I think did we lose Steve? Or is he there and just not hearing us? Yeah.
Can you hear me?
No, we lost you. We lost you for a good 15 seconds, actually.
Oh, geez, sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
That's all right. It's just wherever you're standing.
Bottom line is, it's important that as a practicing vet, I do everything in my power to make an accurate judgment and share that information with the examining vet, and the examining vet be given the liberty to make a decision, you know, and not be pressured into, you know, running or allowing horses to run that he doesn't think really are capable of running. And, you know, and we have to, like, back those guys and stand by them because, I mean, they are your first line of defense.
Yes. One question that just came in, and absolutely good timing. We could even maybe save it for next week, but I'll float it out there, Steve. Our friend Jeff on Twitter was asking about the Breeders' Cup out of competition testing and what elements it entails, and says that you're listed as a vet of record for the Breeders' Cup for this year. Explain to everybody what goes on with the out of competition portion of testing.
Well, they'll randomly select horses to go and pull samples to make sure that they don't have things in them that will, you know, like anabolic steroids, you know, certain antibiotics that leave residues and have components in them that basically could cloud and or affect the post-race test. Potentially things along the lines that they can, you know, that have been given recently, like, you know, blood doping agents and certain anti-inflammatories, narcotics, clenbuterol. I mean, there's a laundry list of things that it's important that these things be looked at. Steroids, corticosteroids inside, you know, let's say certain windows, certain, you know, and you're going to know what these are and what to avoid and what to use, not in the certain jurisdictions, obviously Kentucky this year being that it's here at Churchill. But this is what they're basically, yes, because they want to put the best, cleanest, most unadulterated product out there that they know is going in clean and I mean, the racing and the people that are involved with these outfits and the horses that are going to be running in this, you know, this highly competitive and very, very lucrative, potentially life-changing event, you know, for certain horses and or their pedigrees. So, I mean, it'll decide the horse of the year. These races decide championships, Eclipse Awards, trainer standings, you know, there's a lot of things on, and then owner standings. There's a lot of things on the line here, so they want to put out the most pure, unadulterated, unaffected, and, you know, honest product that they can for the public to scrutinize and let the best horse run and win. And that's why the out of competition testing is done, so there's not someone trying to take an edge or do something illegal that's going to affect the outcome of these races in a deleterious or a bad way. So, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And there's a lot more detail I could go into, but that's essentially why they do it randomly and they do it unannounced. So it's not like you know they're coming. So that's a good thing.
Absolutely. The Breeders' Cup has done all it can in terms of getting, you know, the most comprehensive program. They've tried hard, and it's not, it hasn't been without issues. I mean, obviously, what transpired 2 years ago, problematic issue with masochistic, which became a real mess, and that also pointed out some of the frustrations that are associated with state, the state portion of entry taking, or the oversight, that one could have been handled a lot better, certainly, and it
it should have been handled way differently.
So. Well, Steve, these topics, I sent everybody to TDN from October 3rd to read Dan Ross's piece about equine cardiac sudden death. And you and I over the years have talked about it so many times. And I thought Dan wrote a terrific piece. That's something that people can, can learn more. It's mysterious. There's things that you can tell are happening inside a horse. Then there's things you can't tell, and we try to shine a light on them. And as always, your contributions are invaluable on that front. And I hope everything's been good. Where you been? You've been hitting any rodeos?
No, not lately. I got a young horse. My old horse got an injury, and I was rehabbing. And I got a young horse I bought in California last year, but he's turned out to be a pretty nice horse, so that's a good thing.
You're training him for roping, and how long does it take to develop one?
They keep developing. My old horse is 16, this horse is 7, and he is really, really athletic, and he's turning out to have a really great mind. I stopped roping on him and just rode him and worked on just training him, and now I've got him back on cattle again, and he's just doing phenomenal. He amazes even me. I'd like to tell you I'm a really good trainer, but I think he's just a really good horse.
Well, I will take this opportunity also to mention one of the funnier things that happened here in the last month, which was the horse that Aaron Yagoda named for you, the Dr. Allday, the Will Take Charge colt. And people, I'm sure it got back to you. People got a big kick out of him having to he scratched out of that race that he was entering his debut.
Day. Yeah.
Yes. And people, people thought it was very funny that when it said, the reason for scratch, veterinarian. Well, of course it's a vet scratch.
Oh my goodness! But John Service is a great trainer. Good job with him.
Well, that horse, by the way, is already down at Palm Meadows and actually worked this morning. Went 5 furlongs this morning at Palm Meadows.
Well, if anybody gets him ready, John Service can. He recognizes talent. He's a pretty good horse trainer.
Well, we're watching for the career debut. I guess now it's going to come at Gulfstream. Florida-bred Dr. Allday, a 2-year-old by Will Take Charge. I love it. Steve, thanks so much. I'm going to see you in a couple of weeks, eh? Kentucky?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Me as well, and always a pleasure to have Dr. Allday traverse the landscape when we bring up any topic. I can throw anything at him, and mostly I barely give him much notice and just throw them out there, and he fields them. We'll take bottom of the hour timeout. Seth Merrow, we'll get Seth in here, and of course Dr. Allday, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Horse health today. Visit Luberson.com and thealldayway.com, where Steve and Alex Hassinger will answer your question. If you haven't visited that website, take advantage. And a lot of answers about pretty much anything from nose to tail about your horse. Seth Merrow next. We'll look at the carryover sequence at Belmont today. only one race off the turf, which is refreshing. The sixth is off, but everything else stays on. And we've got a 30,000-plus carryover into today's action. Seth is next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started. Think you have what it takes to play in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and win your share of $1 million in prizes? Then head to ExpressBet to register. The BCBC is the country's biggest live handicapping tournament with ExpressBet. You can get in on the action without leaving home. Don't have an ExpressBet account? No worries. Sign up today and receive up to a $500 welcome bonus. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. When we're prohibited, National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just awaking. So get that needle in the core. Scratch that.
We're back. 20 minutes to the top of the hour. K-Row Emerald, who is fabulous. We like K-Row Emerald, and we like talking to Seth Merrow, too. He joins us now. Good morning.
I'm not a singer, though. No singing. No singing.
I sort of can see that, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds good in the shower, I guess.
Have we ever seen you with the karaoke machine ever?
No. No, that wouldn't be good.
Interesting. I'm trying to think of who. I'm sure there's somebody in the media landscape that if you had to guess, who amongst pundits would you think would be really good? I know they got that jockey karaoke. They should do handicapper karaoke.
Because a couple of those jockeys, that's the funny thing about music. It's hard to predict. I don't know if I could predict, but just all of a sudden somebody jumps out and sings, and you're always surprised. I mean, the perfect example was Gomer Pyle, Two Neighbors.
Well, I guess. All right.
That Gomer Pyle accent, then all of a sudden he was like an opera singer when he started to sing.
So he had that big, powerful, is that a baritone or a bass? What is he? Yeah, baritone, right?
I'm not sure I know the definitions well enough. I just know he'd show up on like Johnny Carson or something and be like, wow, Gomer Pyle, who knew?
Well, Andy Griffith had a great voice.
Yeah. Andy Griffith, for folks who don't know, we're off topic here, but for folks who don't know, his acting career before he became, you know, America's Sheriff, the movie with Patricia Neal, and I'm forgetting the name now, where he is a bad guy in that movie.
Yes, he is.
Look that up.
Type
in Andy Griffith and Patricia Neal in Google, and you'll find it. If folks haven't seen it, it's worth seeing. I want to say Face in the Crowd.
Face in the Crowd is exactly right. That's exactly correct.
All right, yeah. And he plays it kind of relates to today. He plays this
yes,
guy
it does.
Who is a country bumpkin, and he becomes a huge TV star, and everybody follows him. If people haven't seen it, it's worth looking up. But it's not the Andy Griffith you're used to if you don't know him outside of the TV show.
It is from an era. If you want to see a double bill from that era, put it together with Sweet Smell of Success.
Oh, sure. Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster, right?
Yeah, if you want and a young Martin Milner. If you want acerbic and cynical and dark back-to-back, A Face in the Crowd and Sweet Smell of Success. There's my my twin bill.
Very good. And then if you want to lighten it up, you can go back to the regular Andy Griffith and No Time for Sergeants.
Which is cute, which is in the Bilko realm. Lonesome Roads was the character and you're 100% right about its relatability to our current malaise. Seth, we've got a day without rain, which is certainly a treat, and I think we're getting a nice set of downs here without any problem. And I don't know if we're going to get any turf courses back to firm, but at the very least, we're going to get some fall turf racing. It has been a nightmare.
Yeah, and I mentioned this on the air the other day. You know, when they come out as they normally do, I don't know whether it's quarterly or every 6 months now, but those national handle figures, I mean, this section of the year is going to be affected by, you know, it wasn't just New York. Maryland has taken a hit, too, and the field sizes have been stretched down to small fields from large 12-horse potential turf fields. And so, the national handle will take a hit, no question about it. It's disappointing, but, nothing you can do about it. Here in New York, we're going back to Saratoga, really, where we've been in kind of a rut weather-wise that's kept us off the turf. And it's frustrating, but again, nothing you can really do about it. And what you have to do as a horse player is do, I know Andy talks a lot about it on the New York simulcast signal, look for the opportunities. And there have been over the past couple of weeks in New York, some of these main track-only horses who have gotten away at good prices. And you just have to kind of find those opportunities and make the most of them.
Well, we've got some opportunity today when it comes to the carryover sequence. We'll look at that. And I've been spending a lot of time each day doing some Breeders' Cup work, some advance work, trying to get everybody familiar with the fields as they're coming together. And we're getting close. They're starting to really firm up nicely. And that will be a big focus and certainly something that you keep tabs on, and the steady supply of info at Equidaily. There are a couple of races that are going to come up fairly short field-wise, and that's going to be the juvenile Juvenile Fillies this year again is going to have a what looks to be a maybe an 8 or 9 horse field, and the sprint is going to be a little short.
Yeah, it's top of the page at Equilay today. Enable looks like that's going to
yeah, she's set.
So that's going to be a great story just to see what she can do. I'm not sure where you go betting wise with her in only the third start of the year, and she was huffing and puffing, I guess, when she came back. But the workout, which just a few days ago over at Newmarket, they said she worked pretty well. So she's just going to add some intrigue to it. And as you say, it's going to be fun to see how the fields do shape up. A couple of them potentially shorter, given the amount of money that's up for grabs. But as always, with the Breeders' Cup, they're really competitive fields. So even if you wind up with a field that is shorter than full, you're still going to be scratching your head in a lot of these races.
Well, we'll look forward to further thoughts in the next 2 weeks. In the meantime, I'm guessing you looked at Belmont today?
I did. I'm actually on TV today. I'm not usually on TV on Wednesday, but after I get up, I have to head down to the studio. Before we get to today, I just want to go back and congratulate. It was fun to see Pat Kelly over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Fire team. Puts a couple of nice stakes wins together, so that was fun to see. So congratulations to Pat and his folks with Fire Key.
Absolutely, and we talked to Pat after she won at Laurel. She was even more impressive. It's so strange, too. You look at those three races this summer, and they were so dreadful that, you know, you wondered, you really get to a point where you say, you know, she threw. And snaps back, and a lot of times, even though she hadn't been a horse necessarily that demonstrated a disdain for warm weather, you do get that, and you get the fall, you know, when temperatures drop. Roger Atfield years ago explained to everybody, you know, exactly what happens, and Graham Motion has discussed this too, and generally it happens with fillies and mares more than with horses and colts and geldings. It's a filly phenomenon, and temperature drops and they snap back, and she's back, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, something that people should tuck away on the handicapping side. I probably don't pay attention to it enough, although when I handicap, I do look for kind of similar patterns. Usually you can find them higher class horses, stakes horses, trainers that'll come into a race in a similar fashion, which plays into that a little bit. You know, you were in a stakes race last year, you're back in this year, you used one stakes to prep, you used the same stake this year, and you're coming in a similar pattern, which again kind of plays into that calendar year kind of thing. But I do think that's something that's worth kind of thinking about as you look at down the PPs and realize, oh, this horse kind of was out of form and in form, and now we're getting to that similar time of year. Yeah, that's worth kind of tucking away and thinking about.
I'll also ask you, have you been playing the Stronach 5?
I haven't. No particular. The one thing is, it's a buck, which I'm not sure why they did that exactly. But there's no particular reason other than it's fairly new. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and take a close look at it yet. At some point I will, because I think it's a fun idea. These cross-country bets are always fun, and this one tying up the various chronic tracks I think is a fun idea. And so at some point I'll jump in and take a look.
Well, there's only going to be three more. I wanted to slip that in. You've got the 19th, the 26th, and then it'll end on November 2nd. So 6 weeks of this year's run. Other years, you know, years ago when it was the Magna 5, yeah, typically, yeah, that's about right. About 7 weeks it would go, maybe more or less 2 months. So three more chances. And this week's races were drawn, and you've got the Gulfstream 7th starts things off. It's an 11-horse field, going 5.5 on the dirt. Those are maiden claimers for 50, Florida breds. Then you're going to go to Santa Anita, a 9-horse field, a mile on the dirt, maiden claimer for 30. Then the next three races are on the turf. You got a mile turf at Laurel, the 10th race, 12-horse field. That's a money allowance. Gulfstream West, 8th, that's a 10-horse group, that's a an allowance optional claimer, and then first level allowance at Golden Gate, a mile on the turf, not Tapeta. That's the Golden Gate fifth, an 11 horse field. So 11 by 9 by 12 by 10 by 11, that's your Stronach 5 this week on Friday. Maybe we'll look at it tomorrow if we get a chance. Let's glance quickly. We got about a little less than 10 minutes, Seth. You've been a big help to people these last several Wednesdays. And run through the 4th through the 9th, if you would.
Yeah, and I will toss out the caveat. When I looked at this card, to me it was a real head-scratcher, just the level.
I felt the same way.
Yeah, it's tough to jump in with a lot of confidence. 4th race today, though. I won 11, 8, 5, and 10, and I may regret leaving out Kieran's horse, No Limit Babe. I didn't use the 7 off the last couple. They were just too bad, but clearly eligible to rebound with the return to the turf. So I left the 7 out with trepidation, but I put Musical Lute on top. I thought the career debut was pretty good. Regressed last time, but the cut back to the mile may be beneficial and may rebound to what we saw in the debut. Bramble Bay underneath off the number fired last time on the move to turf. And then Long Story Short, that might be live first time out for Mike Maker. I had an 11, 8, 5, and 10 in the 4th.
Yeah, I liked Musical Lute as well, and some No Limit Babe as well. These are maiden 52-year-old fillies, so you do have some dirt to turf tries, etc., to figure out. Fifth race is a 16 non-2 lifetime. Fillies and mares going 6.
I went Master of the Obvious here with Golden Veil on top. 1, 4, 5, and 2. The 2's the head scratcher. The last couple of races are good enough to win this number wise, but they were on turf. The dirt races probably are good enough to stack up here with the class relief. But the class relief is also one of those where you're kind of, I don't know about this drop exactly. So I have the 2 down at the bottom of my mix, but I may regret that as well. Pulled and bail off the past couple, though, just seems kind of logical. Took a while to break the maiden, but just seems to be in some decent form and probably fits with this group. Second slot, Stars Wilburn, again, some pretty good numbers, but it has been knocking around at this condition for a while. It hasn't broken through. But again, looking at the complexion of this particular field, probably fits in the same scenario of Masmania, who up the last a good third place finish, I think probably fits in with this particular crew. So I went 1, 4, 5, and 2.
1, 4, 5, and 2, and Gary's got the pair in here. Masmania, yeah, she's always generally noses around and can run a decent race, but Scripted, she's interesting. A 7-pound bug and goes turf to dirt.
The dirt numbers are good enough. I just, off since July, I was just a little curious, but Scripted clearly is one that I wouldn't argue anybody off of by any means.
Next leg, this is the race that came off the turf, and this is, you're an MTO fan, but there's a horse in here too. I should check the scratches, but there were a couple of horses that absolutely demanded, if they were going to stay in, demanded some attention. So this race was not a slam dunk for the MTOs.
Yeah, I went 13, 2, and 3. Mystical Song, maybe okay, I left that one out just off the long way up. I couldn't quite pull the trigger there, but again, probably not going to be bothered by the surface switch. But I went with the 2 MTOs on top, 5-star Bunt and Wushu Warrior. But Foolish Ghost, Foolish Ghost is also in. So I went with the 3 MTOs in here who look logical. But as they say, Mystical Song, if that one comes back and is ready to run, and a little bullet workout says probably will, that one could be a play or two. But I went 13, 2, and 3.
Yeah, and you can take out quite a few here, the 4, the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 all came out. So it is the MTOs, and you still do get Canarsie Kid and Mystical Song. But the horse that I was concerned about or interested in was Fast Getaway if he had stayed in. So he comes out. 7th, Phillies. These are 3-year-olds going 7. This is a straight allowance race.
2-1, 4-5 for me. Again, kind of master of the obvious, Karen Chadwell horse. Looks okay number-wise with this bunch. You go to that race 3 back up at Saratoga, the maiden breaker was pretty good. The last couple at this level, they, you know, went backwards a little bit number-wise, but that's the blinkers today. As the education at this level, picks up by Rod Ortiz. So I went there. Pink Sands, though, for Shug, broke the maiden 2 back. I thought the first try at this level was pretty good last time in Barrier Island. Another Shug horse comes out of a little stakes race after a maiden breaker 2 back. But those were at the end of last year and then back in January, so a little bit of a layoff there. Otherwise, I might have moved Barrier Island up a little bit, but I went 2-1, 4-5.
Yeah, the 1-2-4 to me are the ones you need to get through. But it would be nice in this seven horse field. It would have been nice to be able to, you know, really pare down to even single. But I don't see how you can. The 1-2 and the 4 all seem pretty even. Let's go to the eighth race, and this is a mile and a quarter on the inner, and another first level allowance. This is a good group.
3-9-1-6, way early over Winter Union. They both looked kind of equally interesting to me, but I just tilted in favor of way early. George Weaver, trainee, broke through a state-bred non-winners of one last time and now moves to this open non-winners of one. So I think in good condition, probably a cozy fit into the he's in good condition and a cozy fit into this race condition. So way early, just slightly over Winter Union. Another one that comes in good form off the past few starts, a couple of close-up seconds to bookend a win, maiden breaker two back, but the first try at this level was a just miss, so seems to fit and Vintage. And maybe you can get away with those two, so maybe a pair down here. Vintage Matters ahead in the third spot, though, and the race two back with that 91 buyer down at Delaware scared me in the Cape Penelope. Then tried the Laurel Turf Cup last time and just never got into it. But I have a feeling the race two back is probably what we'll get closer to. So 3-9-1-6 for me.
Yeah, the three for small tickets, the three feels like a nice lean, a good place to make a stand. And quickly, the New York bred maiden 40s, 7 furlongs on the grass.
Scratches made a difference here. Time expired. It was on top for me. But after the scratch, I went 8-2-3. Good old boy. 6-1. We'll see if that holds up. I thought the last couple of numbers fired as compared to this field were pretty good. So I think this horse fits in. And again, with the scratch, you know, we'll probably take some points off of that morning line anyway if we were going to get it. But Castellano on board. Put that one at the top. Riendo in the second spot. I'm going to draw a line through the last race. And in good form, cross multiply, so 2-3.
Yeah, I think you narrowed it down.
Nothing clever, but it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have nothing clever, but it won't shock me if something super clever, meaning a long odds, comes in during the day. I think it's a head scratcher of a day.
30,000 plus carryover into this card, and Seth, I appreciate it. And the rest of the month we'll be spending on Breeders' Cup.
Always fun. Appreciate the conversation. Good luck to everybody this afternoon.
Seth Merrow 2 on Twitter, everybody, equidaily.com. Want to thank Pete and Tommy Masses. It was great to have Tommy stop in. Byron King, Sid Fernando, Dr. Stephen Alday, Horse Health Today. And Seth Merrow, KC there behind the glass. Like to get down to Florida sometime soon and be able to see KC through the glass. Not sure when. Thursday tomorrow, Haskins been in Kentucky with his stallion tour. So we'll catch up with Steve and with Tony. There was no racing. I forgot to mention that. No racing yesterday at Philly because the jocks were annoyed. The hot box was out of commission. The jock said, "We're not riding until you fix it." Yeah, well, I'm sure Tony will address that tomorrow, right? All right, have a great day, everybody. Good luck. HRRN at 3 o'clock.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started. Think you have what it takes to play in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge and win your share of $1 million in prizes? Then head to ExpressBet to register. The BCBC is the country's biggest live handicapping tournament with ExpressBet. You can get in on the action without leaving home. Don't have an ExpressBet account? No worries. Sign up today and receive up to a $500 welcome bonus. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. When you're prohibited, National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.